Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. In this program, we'll hear Dr. Judith Kleinfeld discuss her recent study on Native college success in the 70s, trends at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. Dr. Kleinfeld is a professor of education at the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research. For the past 10 years, she has been working in Native education.
Doing studies of village high schools, boarding schools, good village teachers, and what happens to kids when they go to college.
The 1982 study on Native college success, co-authored with Robert Travis and Velma Hubbard, states, in the 1960s, less than a third of Native freshmen succeeded in college. In the early 1970s, rates of academic success greatly increased, with over 40% of Native freshmen succeeding in college by 1975. During the later 1970s, however, success rates fundamentally reached a plateau.
As far as we can tell, one of the big things that makes a difference as to whether Native kids do well in college is whether they've been taught well in high school. We've been particularly interested in the village high schools and whether they're preparing kids for college. We look at the kids who come into the University of Alaska from different kinds of high schools, those who went to the village high schools, those who went to regional centers like Bethel or Nome, those who went to the cities, and we compare how well they do. We also look at kids who went to the regional boarding schools before there were village high schools, and at the same type of kids now, whether they do better or worse. Mostly, what we do is, first of all, decide what do you mean when you say college success? That's a big controversy, and people have different ideas. Does staying in college mean you're successful? Can you drop out and still be a success? Should you get a certain grade point average and a certain number of credits? Once you've made that decision, what are you going to count as a success? Then you look at background characteristics. What kind of scores did the kids enter with on tests? What kind of grades did they have? What kind of high school did they go to? And can we tell that kids with one set of characteristics are doing better in college than kids with another?
How did you define success?
What we actually decided was that, first of all, dropout rates themselves were a very poor indication of success. This is because a lot of kids, both Native kids and non-Native kids, take off for a while. They're stopouts, not dropouts. They go home to help their parents with family problems. They go off and travel for a year, and then they come back. If you label everybody who does this as a dropout or as a failure, you're just not in a good place to talk about who's succeeding and who's not. Most of the kids, particularly the Native kids that dropped out, I should say about half, came back at some point. What we ended up then as a measure of college success was this. First of all, did the student get a 2.0, a C grade point average? If he didn't, he was in danger of flunking out. Second of all, did he complete a reasonable number of college courses? We used 7.5 credits. Obviously, you don't want to say that someone who got an A grade in an art course was a college success, whereas someone who got a C after 16 credits of English, chemistry, native languages, and other courses was a failure. We combined both grades and number of courses completed to measure success.
Why so few credits? Most students who go to school consider, or most universities, say 12 credits or 9 credits at the least as a full-time load.
I think you're right. The Student Orientation Services Program and its director urged us to adopt that exact criterion. And in fact, we present our information both ways, with the easier criterion of 7.5 credits and the harder one of 12 credits. We were stuck with using 7.5 credits for a historical reason. we had done this research in the early 1960s and we needed to measure change. We'd used 7.5 credits in the 1960s. That was a time when people were very eager to make adjustments in the standards that were used to judge Native college students. Now the climate has changed, and people increasingly say that they want rigorous standards of evaluation used. They don't want special exceptions made. We present our new information that way. However, if we only present our information in that way, we can't tell whether things have gotten better or gotten worse.
Do you feel that the easier standards, as it were, the lower credits, the programs such as Student Orientation Services and XCEED that were designed to assist minority students have advantaged or disadvantaged those students?
Well, first of all, let's talk about easier standards and easier programs. XCEED, for example, would certainly not buy into that definition. They would argue that their programs aren't easier, they're just different, and they're more appropriate to the college students. To be honest, that's a controversy. There are people on the other side who argue that standards have been watered and have anecdotes, not evidence, but anecdotes, to prove it. I haven't done research on that issue, and I don't know. However, if you just look at changes in dropout and changes in academic success, there's no question that programs like XCEED or Student Services have done a tremendous amount in increasing the number of Native kids who graduate from college.
You mentioned the pattern of people stopping out as opposed to dropping out. Isn't that also a trend among students who are not Native Americans?
Absolutely. It's an important trend. We saw the same thing in an earlier study we did when we interviewed non-Native freshmen. In fact, they stopped out at almost the same rates as the Native kids did, just did different things.
In the study, you noted that there were differences between male and female students. Could you discuss that?
Sure. What we found was that in the early 1960s at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, Native men and women were getting baccalaureate degrees in about the same numbers. Then, towards the middle and especially the late 1970s, that changed, and Native women who get degrees tremendously outnumbered Native men. Since they didn't start out this way, we don't think it's a cultural problem. Instead, we think that other changes have occurred recently which are propelling Native women into college and depressing Native men.
What are some of those factors?
Our research wasn't designed to look at them, and all I can do is speculate. The first thing I would look at is the change in the job market. In the late 1970s, large numbers of women began to enter clerical and teaching jobs, also jobs in government. Men weren't as attractive to jobs where they sat in an office and read papers and wrote them. So I think that that's one of the reasons why Native men are not as interested in college.
Could it also be that there are increasing numbers of programs that are not academically oriented but provide more immediate rewards and returns in terms of the job market?
The pipeline was a good example of that. We did a study on the North Slope on men and women's experience in the job market. We found that for a North Slope male, going to college just didn't pay. He made as much money or more, even on an annual basis, as an unskilled laborer than he did if he had a college education and worked at an office. But for women, that absolutely was not true. If they went to college and got an education, their annual pay just about doubled.
Have you found any difference in success rate from region to region or culture to culture?
No. Whether a student was UPIC, INUPIAT, Athabascan, Tlingit had no predictive value.
Let's get into the correlation between academic success as measured by high school performance and academic testing with college success.
We found a reasonably strong relationship between whether the student got good grades in high school and whether he then did well in college. We also found about the same relationship between scores on academic entrance tests, particularly the English test, and whether the student succeeded or dropped out of college.
You have a low correlation in the areas of math and sciences. Why?
That's right. English competence, the ability to read a textbook, The ability to write a paper is fundamental to success in many college courses. That's probably the explanation for the more importance of these competencies. The question is, what predicts college success? Is there anything in a person's preparation or background that seems to offer a clue as to what can we do to improve success rates? The crucial point for the study is that in the last few years, things have not gotten better. We made some progress in the early 1970s in graduating Native students with college degrees. In the late 1970s, things plateaued. Why, and what can we do about it? The clue that we got from this study was, look at the high schools, especially look at the quality of the preparation in standard English programs. That's only one clue. We may have missed or not even looked for other important ones.
In your study, you noted that certain schools, such as Mount Edgecombe and St. Mary's, seemed to provide a better background for students and produced more students that tended to be more successful. You also kind of defended, I think, the Village High School. Is that true?
Yes. Both things seem to be happening at the same time. There's been a lot of concern about the Village High Schools and whether having a few courses and a few teachers meant that kids weren't as well prepared to go to college. We did not find this to be the case. Kids who went to the regional boarding schools from small villages and kids who are now going to college from small village high schools are doing just about the same. Everybody's gotten better because of these special programs, and kids who go to the village high schools have increased at about the same rate as kids who went elsewhere. At the same time, those Native students who do the best, and do in fact every bit as well as the non-Native freshmen, seem to come from special boarding schools, particularly St. Mary's and Mount Edgecombe. This does not only mean that these schools give the best academic preparation. Quite the contrary, it's easy to imagine that kids who are particularly interested in college decide that they want to go to these special schools. However, my study of St. Mary suggested that the academic preparation was very good and the school had a value set that emphasized the same kinds of values that kids learned in childhood. They face much less cultural conflict than they when they went to some other schools.
In your study, you correlate success with declaring a major early on. Could that also be a difference culturally, where if you're geared toward going to college, you're also geared toward a certain direction you want to take there?
In the study, Native kids who declared a major did much better in college than those Native kids who didn't. So it doesn't seem to be a difference between Natives versus whites. It's a difference within the Native group. Why this occurred, we're not sure. It may be that Native kids who declare a major have a better idea of why they went to college in the first place and are more likely to carry through.
What kind of majors did people declare?
It's easiest to talk about graduates and the areas they graduated from. There, overwhelmingly, the largest number of graduates were in the field of education and then the social sciences. Business management and the natural sciences were much lower, which is a shame considering the need among Native corporations for people who are skilled in business and have some understanding of natural resource management.
But there have been many changes between 1963 and 1979, the years covered by Kleinfeld's study.
In the early 1970s, there was a strong social thrust to improve the college success rate of Native students. There was the land claims, and that demonstrated how important it was to have college-educated Natives to help run the corporations. There was a general nationwide concern for minority groups. That was the heyday of programs such as Upward Bound and COPAN and Student Orientation Services. The University of Alaska in part reacted to this trend when it started programs like SOS and Upward Bound. Those programs had an obvious immediate effect. These concerns seem to have withered away over the last few years, and these are obviously related to national changes in concern with minorities and also to concerns in Alaska with resource development. Other issues have dominated the public agenda. I think the plateauing is a reflection of that. at least things have not gotten worse, but I think we can do a whole lot better.
Dr. Judith Kleinfeld of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research on Native College Success in the 1970s. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.